And the cat starts meowing and he starts meowing back.
Yeah.
He's like, meow, give me the mouse. Meow, give me the mouse.
Meow, meow. It sounds like Dory talking to whales and Finding Nemo, but like it's him talking cat to a cat. She's leaving. He's like, what are you doing? I'm gonna go see Kieran and work. And he's like already kind of established as jealous of Kieran. Mm-hmm. And so like he's following her out and he's like, oh, don't go. And she's like, well, are you gonna go to the dinner? And he's like, I don't know. I'm not gonna do that. I'm never gonna see that guy again. The other set of elevator doors open and out walks Barry. And he's like, he rolls his eyes. He's like, okay, we'll talk about it later. But his arm is still in the elevator door and the door shuts on him. And Barry, who, the thing is that he's just he takes everything so surface. He's like, oh, I hate when that happens. And he immediately sets down his stuff and goes to like help Paul Rudd, who's now trying to block off the girlfriend. And then, okay, so I got to this part really fast because like Paul Rudd's face is smashed in the door. And I don't know if this is ad-libbed, but he goes, I feel like I'm in The Shining, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. Barry pulls Rudd out of the elevator and then lands on him.
He lands straight on his back. They've already mentioned the back thing. He's like, ah!
Yeah. And it ends up being one of those things where Barry then helps him into his apartment.
And lays him on the, it's like the like an L couch, but it's like the Shay Lounge side of it. Yeah. And he's like, ah, ah, ah. And Barry kneels down beside him. And he goes,
and Rudd's like, what are you doing?
I'm applying heat.
And
stop that.
Barry's trying to help. He's like, you know, I can go ahead. I mean, I work with taxidermy mice. I can help you with your back. And he's like, oh, you're so stiff.
Yeah. And then so he's like, don't touch me. Okay. So this is where our note says that they're the same level of idiot. It's just that they're different kinds of idiots. You know what I mean?
Everybody in this movie is a schmuck, except for Kristen Schaal. She is not.
No.
I would say everybody in this movie is a bit of a schmuck.
Yeah.
Because, like, even the girlfriend goes ahead and says, oh, I mispronounced someone's name. I thought it was douche instead of Deutsch. No, that was wrong.
Yeah. Yep. But I also totally identify with back pain. I don't know if you've ever thrown out your back, but it's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Like, back pain, tooth pain, that's what gets me, like, a lot of the time. So the fact that he's like laid out and that plays a part in the next, what, six scenes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I totally, he's got my sympathy on it. The fact that he fights through it, I'm like, nah, I'd have had a muscle relaxer. I'd have go to bed.
Yeah. And Paul Rudd ends up getting up off of the Shay Lounge.
Not until after Carell shows him the mouse he made.
Oh, yeah.
Because remember, this little guy pulls out this mouse and shoves it in Rudd's face. And Rudd's like, that was a dead thing on the side of the road 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
It's so cute, though. He's got a little suit on.
Mm-hmm.
A little mouse. Look, a little business mouse. A little businessman mouse. Sorry.
But eventually, Paul Rudd goes into his room. Like, there's this big comedic scene where, like, Barry's helping him up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's walking. And then there's all of these unnecessary steps in his apartment. And so, Paul Rudd goes on one of them, and then he falls down, and he, like, scoots himself.
He's trying to get a back brace from his bedroom.
Right. And this clears him out of the area, so Barry can go onto his computer.
The computer makes a notification noise.
Right.
And this super ancient-looking chat window opens up.
Text is on there saying, "Where I found you. Where are you at home?
Darla22 with a little kissy emoji.
Oh, no. It says, are you online? And Barry replies with no.
Well, she goes, I finally found you. And then he responds, but what does he say back?
Yeah, she asks, are you online? And he says, no. And she's like, how's your girlfriend? He's like, oh,
not so good. She just walked out.
And then she's like, are you lonely? And he's like, yeah. And like Barry gets a little bit like, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Sorry. And so she said, and when he says, yeah, yes, I am, she sends him a picture of her panties on her bottom.
Yeah, which he immediately prints, by the way.
Yeah.
And she's like, are you touching yourself? And his hand is over his mouth. He's not doing anything dirty, but he is, I guess, technically touching himself. So he goes, yeah. And she's like,
where are you?
And then he sends the address, which makes me think, did he go to his work and get Paul's address?
Maybe. I mean, like, Paul Rudd gave him the address for the dinner, which is the part reason why he's over there.
Because I went there to go have dinner, but nobody was there, so I came here.
Right.
Except, how did he know where here is?
He works, we later find out that he works for the IRS, so he probably got it from the from his database. I mean, that's what I would be thinking.
No, you're right. It's just weird. Paul Rudd comes in. He sees the chat. He's like, what are you doing? Dude's like, Darla's coming over. He's like, that was a drunken hookup 3 years ago. I had to, I mean, like, it was New Year's Eve and she had these fishnets on and I couldn't help myself. And he's like, you want me to tell her not to come over? Which I would have said, yeah, tell her not to come over and then get the hell out. Right. Yeah. But he doesn't say that. He's just like, get out. Leaves the chat. Doesn't do anything. Starts trying to kick the dude out.
And Barry, like, recognizes that he did something wrong, and he's like, I'm going to make this right.
He goes, I'm going to make this up to you.
Yeah. And so...
And then he... Okay, my notes are like, he genuinely tries. He gave... Oh, yeah, yeah. He was like, I'm going to make it up to you. And he did what was the most logical thing to him.
Yeah. He gets down to the bottom of
the lobby
of the apartment building, and he's looking at all of these lady butts.
Holding up the picture he printed out of these.
He actually has the picture. He has the newspaper open and the picture is in there. So it isn't just so obvious.
And he's sitting down. So he's at butt level.
Yeah. So he's looking at all of these butts and he sees one that he's like, oh, I bet this is it. When I was watching it, it definitely looked a little bit rounder than what was in there.
Oh, I thought it looked exactly the same. I thought, Paul Rudd must have a type.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense, too.
But that person's getting on the elevator. We see that it's Julie and not Darla. He starts running up the stairs, and that's when the anxiety is supposed to start mounting. He makes it to whatever the heck floor they're on before she does, and he hits her off before she gets to the apartment.
Yeah, he intercepts her. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He obviously thinks it's Darla, and I can't remember every little thing he says, but he kind of is dropping all of these little hints.
They have this great back and forth. He drops a lot of information. He's like, he told me about the sexy time. She's like, what? And he's like, yeah, Darla. Like, so she knows that he doesn't know who she is.
But right.
He lets her know that Paul had sex with some girl named Darla that's supposedly her. I will give this to her. She is very smart. Mm-hmm. She goes, did Paul invite, not Paul.
Oh, that's right. Because he says, oh, I'm a friend of Tim's. And she's like, I don't know you. Like, she knows all of his friends.
Oh, and you know everything about Tim.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where she's like, did he invite you to a dinner tomorrow? And he's like, yeah, he did. She's like, my advice is that you don't go.
Well, let me give you some advice. Don't wear fishnets.
Don't wear fishnets
on New Year's Eve.
Because when the wind blows, you got to go with the hose. It's like,
it's pretty good.
Yeah. And that's when it kind of like starts unraveling and he starts thinking that, oh, this is Darla. I can go ahead and talk to her as though it's this random person.
Any means necessary to get her gone. And she's like, well, you tell Tim that.
And a plotters, you need to understand something. Rudd's interaction with Darla was before he met Julie.
It was 3 years ago. They've only been together 2 years.
And he states that very, very much to Barry. So we as the audience see it at that point. Mm-hmm. And it's not that he's actually cheated. Because there's a lot of like little things about like Julie thinks that he might be cheating on her. Well, he kind of has all these little drops of like she may be cheating on him.
Mm-hmm. Fidelity, guys.
Right. And Julie is frustrated and confused and thinks that maybe Rudd was cheating on her.
So she storms off and Tim never sees her, right? So Barry knocks on the apartment door and is like, I took care of Darla.
Yeah.
So Rudd has no idea that it's not Darla.
And he's like genuinely like, oh, wow, relieved.
Yeah.
But that's when Barry starts saying, where's Julie? Is she at this? He picks up a magazine with Kieran's face on it. It's a signed copy.
Yeah.
And it says, thanks for Julie. Everything. Thanks for everything, Kieran. And that's when Barry's like, but she's at Kieran's place right now. Why don't we call him?
Mm-hmm.
And I can pretend to be like a documentary, wanting to do a documentary on him. And Rudd's just like, no, I don't want to deal with this. Just go. He keeps saying to go.
Barry's fixated on Tim getting cheated on, which is relevant to his own personal story.
Right. To the point where he is not listening to Tim actually telling him several times, I'm asking you to leave. Mm-hmm. And like at one point, he's like, give me Karen's phone number. And he's just like, oh, 111111. He's like, oh, it's a busy signal.
There was a little bit before where he's like,
Oh, like there's that thing where you're giving a phone number to someone and they're rattling it off too fast. And they're like, okay, I got that part. Yeah. Okay. And what else?
Yeah, but he also, when he's accusing Julie of sleeping with Kieran, he goes, they could be sleeping together right now. And he's like, but they're not. And he's like, well, then why are they in bed? That was pretty good. And then the 111111. Yeah. And then he's like, ah, they must have changed his number because it's given me this weird tone.
Yeah. And then but he's smart enough to like go through the call list and he finds it and he calls him.
Oh, here it is. And he calls it. Okay. So this is a brilliantness because you know how I love science. Well, his back is out. He's stuck on the couch. He can't get up to go stop Barry from being on the phone. So
right.
He's like, get off the phone. So it's a wonderful plot device that he's just like, I'm going to pretend I'm a British filmmaker. I'm Nigel.
Yeah. He's like, I want to do a documentary about you.
And Kieran's like, I'd love to do an interview.
There's like some laughing on the background.
And if they didn't get that Julie chick to do the voice of all the women who talk in the background that fuel Paul's insecurities, like, I'd be surprised. Because I like voice acting. I listen for voices. It sounds pretty spot on. Mm-hmm. It sounds like her.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'll have my people call your people. Hangs up. Then Paul's like, that sounded like Julie's laugh. And and so because Barry's character is, like, fixated on the infidelity, he's like, all right, well, then we got to... Paul's like, we got to go over there. And he's like, you can't drive.
Yeah.
So I'll drive, it turns out. And he doesn't know how to drive a stick. Just like I don't know how to drive a stick.
Yeah. So they go over to Kieran's place. And because of the fact that Barry was the one who was driving, he ended up taking the keys and throwing them to try and get someone's attention.
Yeah.
But they go into the apartment.
Paul Rudd goes, those were my keys, weren't they? And Carell's like, yep. And then you just see that Paul is like, this is what I have to deal with. This is what I'm going to have to deal with. None of this is going to change.
Right. He gets up because the window that they threw everything into has one of those, you know, fire stairs, and they go up into it.
Tim is on the fire escape. Barry climbs in through the open window that he threw the keys through.
Mm-hmm.
And he is just floored by this apartment. He like pulls out his phone. They're talking via phone. He's just like, this place is amazing. I thought you had a nice apartment. This apartment is crazy. Look, he knows Nelson Mandela.
He knows Morgan Freeman. And it's Nelson Mandela.
So what was it? Invictus came out in 2009. So Morgan Freeman had just played
Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela in a film. And so, like, it's hilarious.
Yeah. But who should show up to his own apartment but Kieran?
Right. So he starts walking down the hallway. And then Tim's like, he's coming. Get down.
And he literally just drops down, which makes sense from Kieran's perspective. He wouldn't actually see him because he's kind of getting hit by the couch.
It's true. And so Kieran walks in. Okay. Jermaine, shirtless, in little shorts.
Yeah.
With his long, dark hair and his... like just over stubble beard and it's like dark features and it's just like a little bit better than dad bod going on, like
yeah. And he starts playing the bongos.
Well, first he walks over and he picks up a mango.
Oh yeah.
And the reason this is relevant to me is that I heard about this thing called mango mouth. Do you know what that is?
No.
Okay, so if you eat the skin of a mango and you have an allergy, you can have a mango mouth, or it's called contact dermatitis, right? And the symptoms are redness, itching, swelling, and the flaking of skin. Blisters resembling a poison ivy rash may also develop. And you can avoid it by peeling a mango. Jermaine straight up bites into a whole mango. And the reason I remember this is because I was reading a Reddit post where somebody had eaten a mango and then decided to tittle their diddles and got contact dermatitis on both their mouth and their junk, and then accused their girlfriend of giving them gonorrhea. And now that's a thing you know too.
Which kind of makes sense later on.
Oh! That's what made me laugh so hard.
Okay.
Okay. So anyways, he's looking sexy. He eats a mango and then he decides to go play the bongo drums. He's got four bongos in front of a mirror.
Mm-hmm. And he like, as he's playing them, you see him like looking at himself in the mirror, making all these like, you know, blue steel faces.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
And Carell is like rolling around, like gets his back up against a chair.
And a cat comes over.
And jumps on his shoulder.
Pulls out the mouse from his pocket.
He's like, the Tim mouse! The cat's got the Tim mouse!
Yeah, and he goes after the cat.
Rod's like, leave it! Just leave it! Just leave it! He's scrambling around.
And the cat comes, and he like comes, he heads the cat off, and they're face to face. And the cat starts meowing, and he starts meowing back.
Yeah.
He's like, meow, give me the mouse! Meow, give me the mouse!
Meow, meow, meow! And like, it sounds like Dory talking to whales in Finding Nemo, but like, it's him talking cat to a cat.
Yeah, and he gets the mouse.
Okay, so the cat had walked away from the mouse, but it was underneath the couch. And he's like, give me the mouse. And then the cat goes and gets the mouse and brings it to him. And then he goes, thank you.
It's pretty great.
It's pretty freaking amazing. Paul Rudd is freaking out on the balcony. He knocks a potted plant over, and that turns Jermaine around, who then starts walking towards the window, which is... Corella's between him and the window.
Clement gets distracted by someone saying, Kieran, aren't you coming back here? And he like trots off. Barry proceeds to go to the back of the apartment.
So he's like, he glances, he sees a practically nude figure, and he's like, he's got the phone, and he's just like, Julie's here. So Paul Rudd is now working himself through the window with the back brace on, and Barry's looking through these curtains into this room with all these flashing lights and like mist and like, like
there's two partially naked ladies and they got like body paint on, and like
there's mist and light, and Barry goes,
I'm having trouble describing what I'm looking at.
Which is what I've decided is the clincher for this film. I'm having trouble describing what I'm looking at.
So we both wrote that quote down then in our notes.
We 100% did.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And it's not just that the ladies are like, you know, got a body paint on and they kind of look like birds and they're cawing at stuff.
Also, Jermaine has this giant bird skull on him, which is echoed in the last scene of the film, BT Dubs. I will bring it up. But he's like, they're like, and he's got wings and stuff. And
they're like
stroking
each
other and whatever. And so Tim catches up to Barry, and they both walk into the room because he's going to stop this if his girlfriend's cheating on him, right? But then the lights come up.
Wasn't there a dinner we were supposed to be, you know, going to at some point? I mean, it was called Dinner for Schmucks, and we're in the middle of some guy's apartment.
We're in minute like 30 or 40, but it takes 80 minutes to get to the dinner, guys.
Goodness. And
and it's still day one of a 2-day movie.
Yeah. So Paul Rudd goes in there, and he's just sort of like...
The lights come up. It is not his girlfriend. It is two different girls dressed like birds and one bird.
Man.
Yep. So it's like, I mean, you got to say, to Kieran's credit, he's just like... Tim?
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
Like, he actually remembers him.
He's a stockbroker guy.
Yeah.
Except that's not his job. He's just like, I don't know. I don't know what your job is. I'm going to call you stockbroker Tim.
Yeah. And Barry goes right into his Nigel voice and is like, where is Julie? And Kieran's like, did Julie leave you?
Yes. He's like, he's like, I want you to know. He puts his hand on his shoulder pretty solid. And he's just like, I want you to know that I always found Julie attractive, and I still do.
Yeah. And he goes into talking about how Tim is like not all animals mate for life except for penguins. But Julie is a lioness, and you don't want to mate a lioness with a penguin.
I've spent a lot of time with penguins. They're cool. And he's like, life is two things. It's wonderful, visceral, sexy sex, or death. Sad, boring death. It was weird.
Yeah. And so they do end up leaving. Barry says that he left his bus pass at Paul's apartment.
And his keys. So he can't just be taken home.
So they decide
to make a slumber party.
Well, Red takes him back to his apartment, I think, under the pretense that, you know, he's going to get both of his things and go home.
Oh, is it?
They don't say it word for word, but that's what I would be expecting. Like, he still has to get Barry back to his apartment, essentially.
Oh, I thought they just kind of committed to having...
A sleepover?
Sleepover.
Okay.
Okay, so...
So when they get back to the apartment, that's when Barry is like, oh, you're so over Darla, then why do you have a picture? What does Julie think of that? And he's like, that is Julie. That's not Darla. And then we get a phone call from Julie to Paul Rudd.
No, that doesn't. No? I don't think that phone call happens until after the doorbell rings. Yeah. So okay. So he's like, that's not Darla. That's Julie. And then ding dong.
Oh, yeah.
And so Paul Rudd is standing there in shock because this just happened. Like, he now knows that Barry kicked Julie out of the apartment. Mm-hmm. and Darla's still coming. And so he's like standing there like in shock, like bewilderment. The doorbell rings. Barry's like, I'll go answer it, and just walks over the door.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And who is standing there but a tall, hot blonde.
She is a smoking hot. Mm-hmm. She's got the tiniest eyebrows you've ever seen.
And this is Lucy Punch.
Who's right? Brilliant. The thing I know her from is she was, oh my gosh, I almost called Neil Patrick Harris Dr. Horrible. Neil Patrick Harris's girl love interest in the final season of A Series of Unfortunate Events on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
So she's amazing at playing an idiot who's got like malicious intent.
Yeah.
It's well up there. She's so good.
Applauders, you may remember her from the last our last podcast of Hot Fuzz. She was the
ditzy girlfriend.
Yeah.
Oh snap, of the theater guy. Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of what like sparked you into thinking, oh yeah, we should totally do this movie.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, I don't remember. No, I'm with you.
Or was it your idea, Jen?
No, I think I mentioned that Lucy Punch was in Dinner for Schmucks. I don't know if that was on air or not, but
probably not.
We did a little talking,
yeah,
in between the movie, and like we're just IMDb-ing back and forth. So yeah. It probably came up then, and I was like, "You haven't seen Schmucks?"
Yeah,
yeah. But yeah. She is amazing, and she gets herself in that apartment.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Also, like she's British, right?
Oh, I guess so. Yeah, everybody. It seems like everybody in Hot Fuzz was British.
Yeah, because she does a pretty on point American accent.
It's not hard to sound stupid.
I don't know. There's just like this very specific like American accent that I think British people do that it always just like as an American speaker, it sounds very, very obviously a fake American accent. But hers is pretty spot on.
Oh, you know what happened that we forgot to say? When the boys first walked into the apartment, Barry goes, 1, 2, 3, and then jerks Paul Rudd's back and it all goes into alignment. He's like, how did you know to do that? And he's like, my spines and human vertebra, eerily similar. And you should know that just because his back is now fixed.
Yeah. That's important.
Yeah.
But Darla shows up, and as she's like coming in and like, you know, in a very creepy way, hitting on Paul Rudd.
Yeah. Yeah. She's getting really aggressive. And then he tries to like not manhandle her, but he puts his arm on her shoulder and her forearm and just kind of pushes her towards the door.
In a gentle way.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, you're hurting me. And he's like, no, I'm not. I just.
Yeah. And then he like literally lifts his hands and he pulls them away and he's like, I'm not even touching you. And like at one point she's like, who's that? She looks over at Barry. He's like, oh, is that
no, she's got him in an arm lock and she's like, who is that? He's like, it's Barry. And she's like, you want me to screw his brains out in front of you?
And he's like, I can honestly say I don't want to see that. And she's just like, she's gonna go over there. And she goes over to Barry, and as she goes over to Barry, that's when Julie calls. And she's just like, just be honest with me. Are you cheating on me with someone named Darla?
Right. So Darla's got her hands on the phone, and she puts that phone into her pants in the front of her crotch. And then Paul Rudd has to get on his knees, and he has to talk to her crotch. And he's like, no, it's ridiculous. Like, he's screaming into this woman's pants. He's like, no, how could you think that? That's the most crazy thing I've ever thought. And then she like moves her hips a little bit, and her hands are up, but it goes click, and she goes, oops, I think I hung up on her.
And here's the thing, like Lucy Punch is just laughing, and I'm kind of like, that's hilarious.
It is 100% mood,
because she's wearing like these very skin tight black pants, and when she puts the phone in there, you can still see the
LED screen.
Yeah.
Well, he grabs the house phone and runs into the bedroom and locks himself in,
right?
And there's a brief shot of her taking the phone out of her pants a little bit.
Yeah, just slightly. Yeah, you can see it.
So now he's, because Julie's left her phone, he's calling around every place he can. He actually calls
her friend,
Julie's friend Naomi, which is meta.
Yeah.
As F for me, because whenever my name shows up in media, it's like unusual, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's like whenever a Lydia shows up in something.
Yeah. And it's immediately followed by somebody singing Lydia the Tattooed Lady behind it.
Right. But making a Beetlejuice reference.
Okay. But Naomi, there are no songs. It is just the name you give a throwaway character.
And this one doesn't even have an actor behind it. It's
just
a name.
He's just like, hey, Naomi, do you know where Julia is?
Yeah.
And so what Darla is trying to do now is to incite mad jealousy by like continuing sexy escapades outside the bedroom door as he's trying to call his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's trying to get Barry in on it. And Barry is just clueless.
Yeah, she's just like, I'm a schoolgirl and I need to get punished by my professor. And he's just like,
you're a little old to be a schoolgirl.
Yeah, and she's just like, she's like, just play along with me. And he's like, I'm not a professor. I work for the IRS. And she's like, I've been so bad. I haven't paid my taxes and I need to get punished. And he's just like, well
that's not how that would happen. You'd probably just have to pay the back taxes and in interest. And she's just like,
she like gets over his lap and she's like, spank me.
And then she ends up spanking herself because Steve Carell just sits there with his happy dumb face on and it's glorious because it's like he's trying to figure it out but he just isn't there yet.
Yeah, and so she like gets up and
everything. Do you notice she licks everything? Mm-hmm. She licks Paul's hand, she licks Paul's face. It's gross and I don't like it because you can't fake licking.
Yeah, Darla starts like slapping her own butt and then
so then she goes off of his lap and is like being now in the background Paul Rudd's like, oh, it doesn't matter because I don't care about that romantic. Yeah. What I care about is these guys then going into the craziest little routine where like she jumps up and she's like, oh, I've been so bad. Slapping her own ass. And then Steve Carell jumps up and he starts slapping his own ass and he's like, oh yeah. I don't know if you've ever hung out with little kids who like imitate something they see but they don't understand what it is, but that's exactly what's happening and Steve Carell nails it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's amazing.
Yeah, and so like they start like I don't remember how they get into like the animal side of it, but she's just like,
she says something like, you're an animal, and he's like, oh, I call baby penguin.
Oh yeah,
not baby penguin,
but yeah, I call penguin
because of the previous penguiny conversation,
right?
And she's like, I'd eat a penguin.
And and he starts like waddling around like, he's a penguin. I can't get away. I'm a turbo penguin.
He run waddles away and she's like, I'm going to get you. And he starts knocking chairs over so it's harder for her to fall because it's a game of chase. It's not a sexy game for him. Yeah. It's like a catch me, catch you game for him.
Right.
And so she like clocks her knee on this chair that's been turned over and she's like, ow. And he's like, did you hurt yourself? Oh, did that hurt? And she's like, oh, I'm going to get you. And he's like, oh, no, you're not. She climbs across the table. And so like, okay. So she goes to grab him. He pushes her something. It cuts to a stunt double. I don't know if you noticed, but like this stunt double who's got the same back tattoos as she's got, like flies over the edge of this railing and clocks her face on it.
He throws a blanket over her. And, that's what
makes her trip over the thing. Okay.
Right.
So she jumps up. She's got blood on her teeth and she's bruised her cheek.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't. The railing has. And she's like, I'm going to kill you. And he still doesn't know. He's like, is this part of the game?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, no, you're not. She goes to the wine cabinet and pulls out two bottles of wine and chases after him.
Yeah.
And she chucks one at his head. He ducks. It smashes on the bedroom door. It smashes the bookshelf,
which has glass shelves
and all this artwork on it. You know that was super expensive.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh, and Paul's like, what, in the bedroom? And then she's mad still, so she chucks the second bottle of wine at him, and he catches it like hard, catches it right, gulk. Yeah. And then he turns and he's like, we're still role playing, right? He doesn't say it, but he's like, he like turns and he holds the bottle up. And he's like, glug 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 glug, and she's like, what the.
So she gets two. Oh, and as she goes to grab two more bottles, and as she's gone, he throws the bottle in his hand against the door.
So this is a red wine bottle. And then she comes at him and he backs up and then he just dead falls against the door.
She like backs him up against the door, throws one other bottle, and she's about to throw the second one. And that's when he just like stops and he just plays dead at the door.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Tim's like, what the hell, right? And he's getting off the phone and he's listening because there's all been all this crashing. And she's like, she looks at this inert body and she's like, Tim, I'm gonna go now.
This was fun. I love you.
It's such a great time. I love you forever. And then she gets farther away. Forever. So then Paul opens the door. He's looking around and Barry's head clunks to the ground and he's staring at him and he's like, Barry? And after like two beats, Barry opens his eyes and he goes, works every time.
Yeah, nobody wants to hit something that looks dead. It's like innate. He says something about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when we hear a ding on Julie's cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And Kieran has just left her a voicemail message.
Go up to the pasture and let the horse run free in the field. She likes to run the grass and get a bottle of wine and stay as long as you'd like.
And Barry says, it's code. Horse, heroin, grass.
Watch
marijuana.
NCIS.
He's like Law and Order.
Oh, Law and Order.
Yeah. And it's like wine, like alcohol, like beer or wine.
It's so good. Yeah, because he's fixated on the cheating thing. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we need to go out there. He's like, I don't have the address. It's a place he doesn't tell anybody about because he goes there to disappear.
Right.
And then Barry's like, I know where we could get the address. I work for the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have it, but I know a guy.
Yeah. And that's when they go to the processing center for the IRS building.
Yep. I call this the highly illegal IRS hijinks.
Barry calls it the mothership.
God, he does.
And that's when we also meet his boss, Thurman Murch, who played by Zach Galifianakis.
My notes just go, Zach. And then at one point he takes off his jacket in this discussion and he's got, you know what that thing is that is called? I will tell you because yes. I had to wear one in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's called a dickie. It's a fake turtleneck that you wear so you don't have too many layers. So he's got like this t-shirt on with a dickie and he had an outer jacket on, but yeah. Then like he decides to take it off and he just looks like a chicken.
And he also he says he can control minds.
Yeah, Barry's like, be careful. He can read your mind.
And then Barry exposes that, you know, we're looking for his girlfriend, Julie, because, well, he doesn't specifically say it's because he left her. But Thurman's like, oh, so your girlfriend left you. And
well, Barry just told him. So like, yeah. So
yeah, Barry's like, see, he can see right through you. And
yeah, it's just this great wordplay. And the thing with Zach Galifianakis is the way that he delivers things. He's so deadpan. He is so committed as a character that it's glorious to watch him fully commit to such a terrible character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he even like pulls out like his, he says it's his book, but it's like no bigger than a magazine.
It's got, look, I used to work with paper. It's probably got 50 plus pages.
Yeah.
So that's 100 click count, guys.
That's $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Even if I buy it from here, well, it was shipped from somewhere else and I handled it.
Right. So there's this big display of power, which is just, it's too great to really like
describe.
Yeah.
In the famous words of Barry, like a few scenes ago, I'm having trouble describing what I'm looking at. Thurman kind of shows his power over Barry by looking at him. And there's a lot of just like shots of Thurman looking like towards the camera. Mm-hmm. Is it like directly?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Barry's looking directly at the camera too. And it's just like shot versus shot.
Yeah. And what Zach is doing is playing on Barry's insecurities. He's inducing like a panic attack that he's in control of.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tells him that he's frozen in his body and he just completely believes it. And Rudd's character can't. He's like, he can't believe that he would submit so fully. And he's just like, no, he's too powerful.
Right.
He's too powerful. And then...
And at one point, Barry's like, turn on me! Because he can't even move his...
He's like, he can't even hear you.
Yeah.
No, I can hear you.
Yeah. And I was like... and then at the very end, Thurman says, and I release you.
Right.
And that's
when, amazing.
And Barry's just like, I'll never take freedom of movement for granted again.
Mm-hmm. And so Zach's character says, oh, I'll get that address for you, but I need you. I could make you say it, but I want you to say of your own free will, you can eat my pudding. Yes, so he wants Barry to say that. Right. And here's the thing. I haven't watched this thing in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
When he said that, my entire torso contorted in on itself like when you crush a soda can because I was like, oh, no, this is really bad. This is really, really bad. This is really, 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 really bad. I just had this like stored anxiety about this scene that I didn't know was there until I heard the word pudding. And then I was like, I know exactly how this man feels. Not because I've been in his position, but to have something just so, traumatic.
Yeah.
I called it instant trauma rewind.
When we were watching it again today, I was just like, oh. Like the first time I watched it, I was like, it's just like, you know, this phrase is probably like literally talking about pudding, a pudding cup.
They work at the same place. It could be a shared break room.
Right. And watching it again, it's just... Like knowing what the implications of the line are, it's cringy.
And Carell has that weight about it.
Yeah.
You can see him not want to do it. And Rudd has really well communicated with it, just his face, that he has no idea why this is such a big deal. Mm-hmm. He turns and he's just, and Barry's like, I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. And Tim is like, I will give you $1,000 if you do that. And Zach goes, oh, a high roller, I see. And then he goes and he pulls up Tim's, yeah, his
tax return.
Right. And he's like, oh, you know, you can't
You can't claim losses from an offshore account towards future capital gains.
Everybody knows that. It's textbook. And then Rudd's like, well, I guess I'll have to talk to my accountant.
And Galifianakis just starts laughing because it's like such, it's one of those moments where you just, you know, something as a person who works for a specific business or a specific line of work, but someone else doesn't necessarily know it. And you were, and he just laughs so hard that you see his face slowly go from pink to bright red.
This laugh that sounds like this. And his face turns bright red because Zach can do that. And then he stops laughing. And he holds up a bumper sticker or some little leaflet thing it looks that's like just like 1-800-IRS.
1-800-IRS. Yeah, but like, right before he does that, he's like, you're going to get audited. And his face goes from a bright red back to his normal color. And it's just, I don't know if there was some CGI that was put on there.
No, that's just Zach.
Oh, my goodness.
100%. I bet you he changed his face.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen him in too many things to not believe that he can do that.
Yeah.
That's why he was doing that weird laugh, because it raises the blood pressure in your face or however you would actually say that. And he just gets flush.
Fun fact, the 1-800-IRS audit doesn't have enough numbers in it, or it has too many letters.
Yeah, that drives me crazy.
Right.
Yeah, I don't like it.
And so they end up leaving without Barry actually saying the phrase, and they're in the parking lot, and...
So this is where we get the, I'm going to send you home.
Oh, yeah, this is the part with the, oh, I don't have my bus pass. I don't have my keys.
Well, then I'll take you home. A car pulls up in front of him. Now, it's nighttime. Mm-hmm. That was like way late, guys.
Yeah.
A car pulls up and Barry immediately recognizes who's there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, my God, it's Martha. It's my ex-wife.
Yeah. And who is she coming by to pick up but Thurman?
Yeah. So what's her name?
Martha.
No, I know her. I know. But who's the character's name?
It's a chick who was in Mad TV.
As Mrs. Swan. It is Lois Griffin. It is also...
Alex Bornstein.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't recognize her. And she's only in this scene and you only see her face. And then you only ever see mice with red hair that represent her.
But why does this feel like wasted talent, the movie?
Yeah, that they did not use her for more is amazing. I don't get it. But she runs up to Zach. Hey, maybe like we just don't know something about Hollywood. Maybe they were dating at the time or something.
Maybe that's where the last $1 million went to. They were like, hey, Alex, we want you in this very quick cameo where you're not going to be doing anything. Here's $1 million.
You're just going to giggle and love up on Zach Galifianakis. Yeah. And that's going to cost us $1 million. Look, I know that in terms of like celebrity crushes, I'm pretty easygoing, but you wouldn't have to pay me $1 million to cuddle up on some Zach Galifianakis, the comedic genius that's squishable. Mm.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I would cuddle him.
And this is also the moment where Barry says that he used to, his pet name for her was Pudding.
So what he was essentially trying to do was to get
Barry.
Okay, so
this
is where Barry says, she cheated on me with Thurman.
Thurman, yeah.
And I used to call her Pudding. And then Paul Rudd understands what he was asking of him and why it was a big deal to Barry and why Barry couldn't say it. And so they drive off. He's got a lot of sympathy for Barry right now. And that's why not having your bus pass, not having your keys equals best bros slumber party time.
Yeah. And so they're back at Rudd's apartment. Barry's staying over. Barry pulls out the ring from Rudd's pocket. And
because, his pants or whatever, or jacket, a second time somebody goes into somebody else's pockets in this film. And he's like wowed at this, like, probably 3-carat ring.
Mm-hmm. And Rudd's pretty, you know, like, sensitive about it still, obviously.
You're going to ask her to marry you? I have a couple times, actually.
And Barry ends up going to sleep on the couch.
So he sits him up to go to sleep on the couch. Barry lays down Dagwood style from Blondie, right? Mm-hmm. And then he goes to lay down in bed, and then all of a sudden, like, just it pans over from Paul Rudd's face, and then Steve Carell's like, I can't sleep. I'm too excited about dinner. Here's where my notes unfortunately have to say, this is me at a slumber party. I can't do it. Like, I wish we had adult slumber parties, but I would still be the one last to go to sleep, first one up, first one. Oh my
God. Yeah.
I just can't do it. I get too excited. I want to be with my friends. We're all here.
That's cool. That's pretty cool, though. And so
he's too loud, he's too interested and too awake.
And so Rudd ends up giving him some food, setting him up with watching a monkey eat paper,
microwave popcorn, almond milk,
and puts like headphones on him. And like Steve Carell just gives this pure joy face at watching a monkey eat paper.
He's eating the paper, and he just screams at the top of his lungs.
Yeah, and it's
laughing so hard at this movie.
I know, and like
Paul Rudd's back, and Betty throws a pillow over his head. He's like, "Ugh!"
And then eventually, Barry goes to sleep. Paul Rudd goes out and like sees these pictures.
Barry's asleep on the couch, and beside him, in the remnants of his delicious snacks, is these pictures of mice, and they catch Paul Rudd's eye.
And it's backstory on how everything landed between Barry, Martha, and Thurman. And like you see Barry Mouse and Martha Mouse married and, you know, running out of the chapel.
And then you see Barry Mouse finding Martha and Zach Mouse. Wow, those are all the wrong names, but in bed together.
Mm-hmm. And you can actually see on the wall the wedding photo in black and white, but it's tilted.
Yes.
And then the very last one is Barry Mouse with a picture of Martha Mouse at a kitchen table.
He's crying as he's eating a meal with a picture that he's made a meal for.
Yeah. And so more sympathy ends up getting drummed up for this guy, which, you know, if you wanted to make the argument that the turnaround of Paul Rudd's character at the very end of the dinner would not have made sense without this information, that would be valid. But I mean, I think you could still like show it.
The depth of the betrayal that Barry has suffered, maybe now it's dawning on him why he's been so fixated on thinking that Julie's cheated.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's becoming clearer, and he's becoming more than just the picture in front of him.
Right.
And it's ironic that looking at pictures is giving him that depth, but I'm into it. So, now it's morning.
Right. And what's great about this is that Paul Rudd's kind of treating Barry as like he's a kid. He's like giving him food, saying, okay, don't turn on the stove. Don't touch anything electric. Just sit in the chair.
Eat your cereal.
Right.
I'm going to the brunch with the nice Swiss couple.
And Barry's like, sometimes I think that you think I'm an idiot.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, don't move it. There, did you see that entire bowl of sugar on the table that was all spilled everywhere?
No.
There was a big, like a whole soup bowl full of sugar, and you could tell that they'd spooned a whole bunch of it into the crispy treats that he's eating. Not crispy treats, but Rice Krispies. And then, like, just sugar all over the table. I was like, yep, that's also me.
Yeah.
So Paul Rudd explaining what he's doing. He grabs, there are two phones on the table. They look identical. I know this is 2020 me talking, but if my phone was next to a similar looking phone, I would look at the lock screen before I left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he doesn't. He just grabs a random phone, and you know it's the wrong phone.
Yep, because plot.
Check off cell phone.
Yeah. But Barry realizes that Paul Rudd has taken the wrong phone when there's a call that comes in from Rudd's secretary, played by the wonderful Kristen Schaal.
This is, I think, the last time we see her.
Mm-hmm.
She, he's got a mouthful of food, though, so she can't tell that it's not Tim.
Right. And so she's just like, so I'm working on Saturday. I'm booking you overtime for this.
She's drinking at the office.
Yeah. And so she's like, it's very important that Julie shows up because they want to meet her. And but Barry's got this whole big mouth full of food, and he starts panicking.
He's like, okay, Julie will be there. Hangs up the phone. He's been told not to leave the chair. So he picks up the chair and runs around the apartment trying to get to the door. But Tim's already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so he starts making phone calls and like trying to figure this out. He calls Tim's phone, but he's got Tim's phone. And then he's like, okay, when you get this message, and he hangs up and he's like, oh, you won't be able to get that message. She calls back. He's like, my password to get the message I just sent you is PASSWORD.
Yeah. And he's like, obvious that he's panicking and
full panic.
Yeah. And we see Rudd show up to the restaurant, and he's like making all this like small talk with the Swiss couple, saying something that's kind of cultured. And the Swiss guy says, it is rare to find an American businessman with a sense of culture. And bam, what plays but a ringtone of Escape, the Pina Colada song by Robert Holmes, which is an objectively horrible song.
I hate that song so much.
Yes.
Like I have physical feels about it, and I'm sure I've ranted about it before, so again, I'll just reiterate, if you haven't heard me scream about it before, songs about casual cheating piss me off. Songs about cheating in general piss me off, but casual pina colada songs, now everybody over the age of 50 is humming the frick along with it.
What's interesting is that it is a song about cheating.
Oh, shit!
And it's Barry's phone.
Oh, no. That just added a layer of sad to me.
Yeah, but I will go ahead and say this. There is also this layer of that is kind of American. That's such an American song. So it really is culture. It's just not highbrow, fancy European rich culture, because not all European culture is like the stuff from like 1800s and everything. There's like a lot of European culture.
Oh, Euro trash garbage.
Euro. What is that? Is it? It's not Eurovision, but it's the contest that goes on.
Oh, I think it's called Eurovision.
Is it Eurovision? Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just go boldly for it. Nobody corrects us on our socials, even though we invite them to.
Yeah. So, and, you know, Red goes ahead and makes an excuse as to why Julie couldn't show up.
Yeah, so she broke her foot, dropped a box on it. He does, when the Pina Colada song goes off, he notices that there are 45 messages and he does nothing about it. And then the maitre d' comes up and he's like, sir, there's a phone call for you. And he's like, oh, well, I'm so sorry. No, he's making headway with them. He's excused Julie from the situation. He's proved that he could hold up his end of conversation. Then he gets two phone calls, like the phone in his pocket. And now the house phone is calling him. So he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Excuse me. And then Barry walks up with the other house. The restaurant phone.
Mm-hmm.
And he walks up and there's this really great echo from when you get two phones close to each other that are on the same call.
Yeah.
And he's got somebody in tow.
Yeah. Who does he have? Naomi?
He's got Darla.
And she's dressed up.
She is dressed in what she and Barry think of as chic. She's got these victory rolls is what they're called in her hair.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got this white suit with black piping, which is indicative of her style, I think, overall.
I think that's technically a... is it a suit? Because she does take it off later.
Well...
So was it more of a jacket?
I mean, like, it's a, I think you can have a dress suit that would have a jacket, a top, and a skirt or pant.
Okay.
I think she's wearing a skirt, though.
Okay.
But it doesn't really matter because she looks, you know, she's like, it's me, Julie. I've missed you, darling.
And then she, like, goes in for, like, a subtle kiss and then, like, goes, ah, blah, blah.
Yeah, she licks his face. Oh, God, this woman's tongue has been on every surface.
Yeah.
And she's beat into it character-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it.
My note is hijinks ensue, the movie. Also, wasn't there a dinner we were supposed to go to?
We're still 20 minutes away. I'm so sorry. She sits down, starts fixing her lipstick. Barry proceeds to have a conversation with the Swedish couple, and this is the thing. I was a little xenophobic against the French at the beginning of the top of this episode, right? But like, that's just because they're caricatured, the women in relationships, a la Amelie, it's a business, right? But he, in a just ignorant way, is like, Swedish. I wonder how offensive it would actually be.
Does your cheese come out of the cow with holes? I love your Swiss Army knife with the toothpicks.
And then he like mimes toothpicks really big. He's like, nang, nang, nang.
And he tries speaking in Swedish, and it sounds like
I speak some Swedish. Flirta, herda, birda, gurda, birda,
sounds like the Swedish chef from
it
the
does.
And after Darla fixes her lipstick, she writes on.
She licks the lipstick. She licks it. She like she's putting it on. She's like, "Are you watching me put this on?" She's like getting it really in his face, and then like, and then she like. Licks it. And then she like slowly puts it into her lap and you see them having this conversation. He's like, I'd like to go over some numbers with you guys. And Carell's inserting it. She starts writing on the napkin. I don't like it.
She passes it over to Red. And what he reads on the napkin is, I'm wet.
Didn't you say, Lydia, that on television they, or maybe it was Naomi.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you had mentioned that they had cut out that and put, I'm hot.
Yeah, just for the edit for TV.
And so he like sees that and he throws it aside. Of course, Barry's got to pick it up.
Yeah. Okay. So the wife goes, are you guys have any plans to get married? Because they're obviously in love with love, right? Mm-hmm. You can tell they're a really great couple, actually. Yeah. They're really solid and you think they wouldn't be for some whatever reason.
The Swiss guy says, you can tell a lot about a man by his partner in love.
Yes. And he's like, Red's like, oh, no, we're not going to get married. No, no. Barry goes, that's a touchy subject. He was going to...
He proposed a couple of times and she said no. And then Darla...
Because he's talking about Julie, but not Darla Julie. And Darla's like... Why don't you ask me again?
Yeah.
And Paul's like, oh, no, I can't do that.
It's not the right time.
The wife goes, if a woman asks to be proposed to, it is definitely the right time.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't have a ring. And Barry's like, that's not true. And for the third time, for the third time in this film, someone reaches into poor Paul Rudd's pocket without his consent. And I'm not here for that. I'm here to rage out about it.
And he's pretty much getting forced into proposal for this person.
So she's like, the wife goes, "You must kneel, for she is a princess." And Darla touches her chest and she's like, "Thank you."
And she looks like, Darla looks very touched by this whole gesture.
Yeah, but it's not for her.
Because she's also like saying, he's like, "Julie," it's like, "Don't call me Julie, call me Darla. Julie's just a pet name," or something like that.
Yes. Yeah, I want it. Julie's just a pet name and I want this to be real.
Right.
And Paul's like you can see him just being pressed down into this situation.
And Barry like dings the glass. And it's
something's
like,
happening! Ding, 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 something's happening! And now the entire restaurant has gone silent and has turned to watch this.
And Red just is like, accepts it, proposes to Darla.
She goes, yes, and everybody's like, yeah!
Yeah, and Julie shows up.
Like, all of us in the audience are no longer screaming.
Yeah.
We're dead because now Paul Rudd feels dead.
Yeah. And he's like, "This is Julie. This is Darla." He tries to explain to it, but Julie, you know, comes in, says, "Oh, I see you already have a replacement lined up." And Darla is like, you're embarrassing yourself.
Right. So then she storms out. He's like, "Look, I'm sorry," to the couple. He's like, "Look, I gotta go. I love her." Mm-hmm. And runs out. And I like that. I'm not mad about that.
Right.
But she takes off. He catches her at the car.
Yeah. And they're talking back and forth. And like, he says, "I know that, you know, you were at Kieran's ranch last night, but nothing happened when I broke into his apartment.
And you weren't there."
Yeah.
And she's like, "You what?"
Yeah.
No, she says, "You broke into his apartment." And he like tries to backtrack really fast. Yeah. It doesn't work.
And the writing does call back to when they had talked about like the other version of Paul's character.
Yeah. Like, who am I talking to now that you'd break into my client's apartment?
Right. And so she drives off and
she's like, "I'm going to that farm now."
Mm-hmm.
And she drives off.
And then Barry pulls up in Red's Porsche.
And he jumps. He's like, "Get over."
And he
jumps in. And they're just about to take off, like, follow her.
Mm-hmm.
But then something smashes into the back of the car.
Yeah, it's Darla. She gets mad.
She walks off. She's hit the thing once. She doesn't have a jacket on. She looks total greaser girl awesome. Mm-hmm. One victory roll has completely come undone. So she's only got like this half horned, half beautiful wave. Oh, mm-hmm. I can't stand like people who have great hair.
Yeah. And she like starts breaking up the car with this thing that must be weighing like close to 50 pounds, yeah, if not more.
It looks
more.
Like a partition post or maybe like a like one of those smoke break stands or something.
Those things can get heavy.
Yeah. And she's just beating the car. She starts at the back of the car and works her way to the front of the car and to the top of the car eventually. But here's my question to you. Why didn't they just drive away? Wouldn't you just driven away?
Mm.
I haven't had a lot of instances with somebody running after my car, but if they're behind me, I generally have the confidence to drive away.
Yeah.
But they stay there until she climbs literally on top of the car and shoves the pointed partition-y thing through the soft top of the car, and then she climbs down, she sticks her head in the window, and she's like, "I don't think you're a very nice guy, and I don't need you in my life. I don't want to ever see you again, but I'm keeping the ring."
And as she's walking away, Barry at this point is kind of playing dead, and as she walks away, he comes back and she says, "I think that's really good for her."
Works every time.
Yeah, and then Paul Rudd starts punching him, and then he, like, you know, goes dead again. That's when he comes back and says it works for every time. Red's talking about how he, like, you know,
He ruined his job. He ruined his relationship.
Yeah, and
He ruined his car.
And Barry's starting to feel sad, and he feels responsible.
He goes, "That was all my fault." He's like, "All of it was your fault."
Yeah.
And it wasn't, but he feels that way. And so Barry pulls out his phone.
And he says the phrase, he says, "Hey, Thurman.
All right.
You can eat my pudding." And he gets...
No, he goes, "All right, you win.
You win." And then he says the phrase, "You can eat my pudding."
And that's when we all die and Paul Rudd feels like again, like he probably should.
But Thurman does come through and gives the address to Kieran's ranch. So off to Kieran's ranch.
So now we're at Kieran's ranch. And there she is sitting on a rock in a studio out in the barn.
And she's venting to her client because they, you know, are kind of forming a bit of a friendship.
Yeah.
But he like is all, I need to photograph you right now.
So he throws a tunic around her and he's like, "I have to get you so raw, so real."
Mm-hmm.
"I've never seen you like this." And she's like, he's like, keep talking about Tim.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Well," and he like sets the automatic flash on his camera, which is his MO.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and what we forgot to tell you was what he told Tim and Barry was that he was going to have sex with the two bird ladies because after taking their picture, sleeping with them was part of his process. And that's why there was only sex and death.
Well, and that was in the car before Julie drove off right after the restaurant scene. She does say that she was going over to Kieran's ranch to help him with his artistic process. And Red says, that means sex.
Yeah.
Because it does mean sex.
I know, but she doesn't know that. So now we know that. And now you guys know that if you don't know this film. Sorry. Right. You should probably watch it at this point.
Spoilers for every movie we're doing.
So what happens is he sets the camera off. She's talking about how lovely Paul is when he's himself. Tim is when he's himself. Mm-hmm. And we hear like clip clop. And Jermaine steps back into the scene. Now he's like, he's gone from wearing a robe and being concerned when taking a picture to like having a full, and this is a throwback, a pan suit on where he's got two horns and pan legs with a little goat feet. Mm-hmm. And he's like bare torsoed, but there's this weird happy trail that goes halfway up his chest and it goes into a V to the bottom of his pants. Oh my God.
And like she looks back at him as he's doing all of these poses.
Like, what are you doing? He puts his hands on her, not violently, but like imploringly.
Right. And she says, I don't feel comfortable doing this. I don't feel comfortable. She's like, I don't want to do this. I don't feel comfortable with it. And as she's saying that, that's when Rudd and Barry come in.
Yes.
We're still a week away from the actual dinner scene applauder. But if you're hungry for more, why not try a few of these other fine film review podcasts? The Movie Cellar reviews movies while helping raise funds to find a cure for type 1 diabetes, and just had an episode devoted to reviewing Office Space. Or if you're a sci-fi fan, we'd also recommend Quiet on the Set Guys, who just reviewed 1994's Stargate. Hey, this is your audio engineer and friendly fool for food, Jen. Tired of having to be reminded each week that we have a new episode? By subscribing on a podcast platform like Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or others, you can be the first to be invited to the party. Writing a review of us in your favorite app is also a great way to help us boost search engine results and reach more peculiar listeners such as yourself. We'll be back next week with the actual factual dinner scene, as well as our shocked and applaudable moments, in the conclusion of a review of 2010's Dinner for Schmucks. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.